Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director here at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highways 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is one of Ellenbecker's own advisors, Heather Deaton. I'm excited to have you here today, Heather.
Thanks, Christina. I'm excited too. I host often, so whenever I'm on the other side of the table, it's always a fun experience.
For sure. And I get to work really closely with you in our day-to-day lives, but very rarely are we in this environment. So this is going to be fun today.
Right.
I'm excited for the conversation. We've got a pretty big topic that we're talking about today of the One Big Beautiful Bill and its impact, really when it comes to charitable giving in America. I don't know if anyone out there has read the whole, I think, 1,800 pages or so that is made up of this one big, beautiful bill. But there's a lot of information in the bill. It really reshapes that landscape of charitable giving. And it's got its sweeping tax reforms, the aim to simplify and stimulate economic growth. But there's implications for philanthropy that are a little bit more nuanced. So I'm hoping we'll get into those today, of really talking about what that impact is. But before we do that, Heather, I have the benefit of seeing your calendar here at Ellenbecker Investment Group, and I see all the additional things that you are doing in the community. Philanthropy is a core value here at Ellenbecker, and I know it's hugely passionate for you. So, you know, how did you get into this? And you've really developed yourself as an expertise in the nonprofit world. So share with me where that comes from.
Oh, thanks so much, Christina. You know, it's really just about like giving back. And when I say giving back, there's so much that you get from being involved in community, being involved in a cause, really living out your passion that I almost feel a little bit funny about saying it's about giving back, because it's really about how I am able to grow when I am helping other people, and just the joy and the fulfillment that I get from seeing a project develop that is going to help, you know, a different nonprofit, a different part of the community. So I've always been volunteer minded, you know, whether that was doing the, I'm going to age myself here, doing the crop walk way back in like second grade, or, you know, volunteering throughout college at, you know, different nonprofit centers when I was doing that. And now I serve on the board for Fondi Food Center. Anybody who knows me knows that I love Fondi Food Center, Fondi Farmers Market, the Fondi Farm. That's a whole nother topic that we'll talk about sometime on the show. But being able to be on that board in the governance area, really being able to help drive the mission and the sustainability of that organization and other organizations similar to that. You know, when it comes to the charitable giving part of planning, right, as advisors here at Ellenbecker, we're planners, that's so centered around the tax savings part of it. And I know that we don't give just to save taxes. Like, we give from our hearts, and we're going to support the people, the places, the organizations that we find that connection with. But if we can do that and also get some tax benefit out of it, that's where the planning comes in. And that's what I just love to talk to individuals, families, nonprofits about. Many nonprofit staff members don't understand, you used the word nuanced earlier, they don't understand the nuances to talk to their donors about their tax strategies. And so being able to educate them and give them more confidence in talking about it can, you know, really help that nonprofit's development goals.
For sure. You know, helping a nonprofit with the development goals. And also, I get to see it on our client side of how much fulfillment our clients get when they find a cause that they love and they learn from their financial advisor that, yes, you can give money to this. That's a wonderful thing to do. You'll get some tax benefits, but you can afford to do it. We're very blessed that our clients give very generously.
Yeah. I love that, too.
Well, I'm excited that part of your give back is diving into this bill and helping our clients to understand what the impact is going to be. So it's a meaty topic. There's a lot in there, but let's start with talking about what are some of the changes that the One Big Beautiful Bill has in place when it comes to charitable giving and charitable giving strategies.
Thank you, Christina, for opening like that, because there is a lot in the bill. The charitable giving side is a few different things, and we'll talk about how that will impact you and donors starting in 2026. Also, what that means for 2025, so we'll get into that later, and what you would really want to think about even ongoing beyond 2025. So one of the biggest parts of this that's really encouraging is starting in 2026, taxpayers, if you don't itemize, you actually get to take a above-the-line tax deduction for charitable giving for up to $1,000 per year for single filers and $2,000 for joint filers. So how is that different? Why is that different? Right now, the only way to get a tax benefit from charitable giving is if you itemize. And for those of us on the planning side and many individual taxpayers, they know and realize how high the standard deduction is. And that means that you have to have so many different itemized deductions at high levels in order to make it make sense to itemize. This way, if you are generously minded, if you give to nonprofits, you'll get at least that tax deduction for up to $1,000 per person. So that's a really big change between this year and next year. And that's ongoing.
That's a wonderful benefit because, as you said, so few investors out there or households are able to itemize anymore.
Right. Now, it's only for donations or contributions to public qualified charities. So it doesn't count if you donate to a private foundation or if you donate or contribute to your donor advised fund. We'll get into those more later. Okay. About the planning side of things. But so it's only when it goes directly to a charity, to a nonprofit.
So if you don't itemize right now, it's important to know where your money's going, essentially, and see if you qualify.
Right. And then keep your receipts, mm-hmm. right? Starting in 2026, because right now a lot of people are like, oh, I just give, I don't get a tax benefit. Start keeping those acknowledgement notes. And so then the next thing that is changing. Now, this is for people who do itemize. Right now, if you itemize and if you give $20,000 to charity, if you are blessed enough to be able to be that generous that you give, say, $20,000 to charity and you itemize that on your taxes, all $20,000 of those go as that itemized deduction. Well, starting in 2026, there's going to be a small little floor. So there's an exclusion amount, and it's 0.5% of your adjusted gross income. So let's say you have an adjusted gross income of, I'm going to make this math really easy, $100,000. 0.5% of that is $500. If you're that person that in that tax year was able to donate $20,000 to a nonprofit, the first $500 of that does not get to go on your itemized deductions. So again, that impacts only people who itemize. So this is where things get a little bit, you know, overlapping and a little bit complicated. But that is an important piece when we think about what to do before 2026. And we'll get to that in a little bit. So that's one of the things. Also, for people that are in very high income earners, like say they're in the 37% tax bracket, that's the highest one there is. if you're itemizing and you do charitable giving, those charitable contributions only save you from 35% tax. That extra 2% in your tax bracket doesn't actually get, you don't actually get the savings on that. So the charitable contributions on itemized returns cap out at a 35% tax bracket. So, you know, the tax return is going to do its magic and make sure it all gets counted right. But it's just another thing to understand that changes next year for the high income earners would be the people that feel that the most. So with the One Big Beautiful Bill, what they've made permanent is the 60% AGI, adjusted gross income limit on cash donations that can be deducted in a given year. Right. So we've talked about these different floors and ceilings and ways to think about this. But again, if we take a person that makes $100,000 and maybe they had a huge influx of cash the year before and they want to be generously, charitably minded and give that away, that max that they can deduct is going to be 60% of their AGI. So they could only deduct, if they did a large gift, they could only deduct up to $60,000 of that large gift. Anything above that would push forward to future years. It pushes forward up to 5 years. So that, to just understand that there's limits on that. They've made that permanent. We don't have to worry about that sunsetting. They also made permanent a 30% of AGI cap on deductions for non-cash contributions. So if you give stock to an organization, you get a tax deduction on the fair market value of that stock, but there would be a max that could actually go on the tax return in that year, and anything above that gets pushed to future years.
Okay. Is there also a 5-year?
The 5-year stretch on that also applies. Yes. So, you know, these are big percentages of your adjusted gross income. We're talking about very generous giving. But as part of planning, we do talk about like boosting up giving in a particular year. And that's where we need to remember and realize that, you know, we can have a client can give a whole bunch, but there are some maximums that can be deducted based on their income.
Absolutely. There's some limitations around that. You know, while you were talking, Heather, the thought that kept coming to mind was how important it is for taxpayers to be meeting with their tax accountants for planning throughout this year, especially if they are charitably inclined, to make sure that they're aware of how these new figures and some of these caps and floors are going to impact them when they're giving.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all about the planning.
Well, with that, we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be back more with Heather Deaton from Ellen Becker Investment Group talking about charitable giving strategies and the One Big Beautiful Bill. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is Heather Deaton, another Wealth Advisor here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And Heather, we've been having a good time today talking about the One Big Beautiful Bill and its impact on charitable giving strategies and what some of those changes are within the bill. Before the break, we talked a little bit about what's going to go into effect in 2026. And I wanted to talk about what's possibly changing already in 2025. You know, we only have a couple months to go still in this year, but our tax team has been joking as this whole bill's been rolled out that it was nice that Congress gave us some time to adjust and think about this, because normally I feel like tax changes are happening right at year end or they're kind of retroactive. But we actually have a couple months to plan here, you know, for clients, and definitely encourage them to meet with their tax planners and financial advisors to dive into that. But what do you see for 2025 based on what you've dove into on this, on the One Big Beautiful Bill?
Yeah, I mean, from the planning aspect, we want to take advantage of what we know is true this year, with one of the biggest things being for, again, high income earners, that 0.5% of AGI floor, that like exclusion from being able to use every dollar of your charitable giving as an itemized deduction. And then also that fact that this year, if you're in the 37% tax bracket and you donate, you get a 37% tax savings. Next year, it would be capped at 35, even though your income's actually taxed at 37%. So how do we get around that? Or maybe more likely, how do we plan to address that? To take advantage of what we know is true today, that would be to like give maybe more, like accelerate your giving in this year before year end in 2025. You could look at that as having your favored charity or charities, and you could give what you planned to give this year, and perhaps you bundle it and you give what you were going to give next year also. You tell your organization, hey, I'm doing 2 years in one. Next year, you're not going to likely get the same giving from me, so they don't feel like they've lost you as someone that's a fan of theirs. But you know, you're doing this strategically so you can really boost up that charitable giving tax deduction and take advantage of it in 2025.
That bundling or bunching that you refer to it as, I think, is such an important consideration when looking at the charitable giving, because so often or not, we hear clients say, oh, well, I do need to give to my, I give to my church monthly, or I give to my, you know, I give to this organization at year end. Whereas having that communication with the organization ahead of time, mm-hmm. and saying, you know, I'm still giving and supporting you, but we're going to do it in a way that's most tax efficient. That helps bring awareness to the organization too, around how they can maybe educate their donors and help individuals get more bang out of their charitable buck.
Absolutely.
I love some of the seminars that you do for charitable organizations, for their donors, of helping them to understand that exact concept. So to go back to that bunching, when you say bunching, you really just mean giving what you would give for 2 years or even 3 years all in one tax year to kind of accelerate that tax benefit.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, if you have organizations that you know you're committed to and that you're passionate about them, that makes a lot of great sense. Talk with them, you know, make sure you get that contribution done by year end. If you maybe don't know exactly where you want your dollars of giving over the next 3, 4, or 5 years to go, and you want to be able to stretch out the gift to the actual organization, another way to bundle or bunch a whole bunch of charitable giving into one tax year is to open like a charitable account. Specifically, a donor advised fund. So it's a DAF, so DAF. Many people are talking about them. You may have heard that before. You know, the listeners may have heard that before. Obviously, we as advisors talk about them all the time. What a DAF is an account that is at a sponsoring organization that is a 501c3. They're in charge of it once you open that account and you put money in it. They manage it. They're in charge of it. You get a tax deduction for whatever you put in there at the time that you donate it, but you can never get it back out. But you can give the suggestion. You can like request a grant come out of your account and go to your preferred organization that also has to be a 501c3. So it's a really great way to load up a whole bunch of giving into 1 year. Get that tax break immediately. And this does not go away with 2025. Like, this is a strategy that mm-hmm. will live on.
We love this strategy.
Yes, we absolutely do. You have a lot of control over where it goes when it leaves your donor advised fund, your DAF. You don't have full control. So when you choose your sponsoring organization, which is, say, the Greater Milwaukee Foundation, the Schwab Charitable Foundation, the National Christian Foundation, you're going to want to make sure that you know what their kind of guidelines and rules are, because they can have limitations on what types of organizations the donor advised funds can grant out to. So that's just a matter of doing your research and your homework, talking to those sponsoring organizations, those foundations, to make sure you find the right fit, the fee structure, how easy their interface is to get those grants to go out. So that would just be always to have that pre kind of homework to get done before you decide where to open it. And then to really do that tax plan on, okay, what would be the best for us? Like, we have a whole bunch of liquid cash on the outside, or perhaps we have a lot of highly appreciated stocks and we want to avoid paying the capital gains on it. Those can go in and fund your DAF. You get that tax deduction for whatever goes into the DAF that year. from there, now this is just a really cool thing I think about the donor advised funds, is that they're a legacy. So you can have like your succession plan. So if you as the owner were happen to not be here anymore, you can say who's going to be in charge of it. So maybe it's your kids, and then they get to control where the money gets suggested to be granted or requested to be granted. Maybe you have it all distribute to your favorite nonprofits at that very moment, and what a beautiful gift that is. Or it's a combo, right? You can do different things with it. So I think that's a really cool way to think. Let me put, I have all this extra cash because I just sold my business. Or, I got an inheritance and I really want to put this for our future legacy. Let's load it into a DAF. We can donate from there along the way. But what a beautiful gift to have for your family to continue on with if you were to pass early.
Absolutely. I like the point that you made, Heather, we're talking about if you sold a business. I think of a donor advised fund, and many of the ones that we work with clients have very low minimums, meaning you can fund it for whatever dollar amount makes sense to you for your plan. But oftentimes we are looking at a larger funding if a business was sold, or maybe you sold that lake home, that second home that you don't get a capital gains exclusion on, a taxable inheritance. There's something like that coming down the line that really can make a lot of sense. I also like what you said about the legacy piece. I actually just went through this experience helping my parents update their estate plan. And I know they wouldn't mind me sharing this, but my parents are very charitably inclined and had previously had a couple of their choice charities assigned as beneficiaries on their IRA account. Well, we reviewed it like we review every year, and it turns out that one of the charities they're just not giving to anymore. They feel that they're more closely aligned with a different one. So that opened up this can of worms of how on top of these beneficiary designations do they need to be, and making sure that they're changing them every year as their charities change. And what we came to through working with their estate planning attorney is that there's going to be a creation of a donor advised fund that my parents' children, my sister and I, will be in charge of, because when that money goes in, when they pass, we'll know which organizations at that point in their life were really important to them and can make sure that money is going where they would want it to go, versus maybe a church that they're no longer attending or an organization that might not exist anymore at that point in time.
Right. And that's a lot less complicated than trying to always be on top of your beneficiary designations. Mm-hmm. And avoiding complexity, right? Simplifying things. That's another feature of the donor advised fund. When it comes to the tax side of it, you donate to that fund, say, once a year or once ever, right? If you load it with a lot of funds that you want, that is one receipt. That is one charitable gift acknowledgement that you give to your tax preparer that year. And then from there, any of those grants that come out of that fund, you don't get another tax deduction for them. You don't have to track them. Like, that is just, when you think about giving, $20 here, $200 here, $500 there, and all those different things. And did you get the acknowledgement? Did you not? Was there fair market value on it? Was there not? To just simplify that and have it go into one place and out of that same place. Mm-hmm. And you have one receipt to track.
Yeah,
I love that.
Well, and I've had some clients say, well, if I put it into a donor advised fund, isn't it really limiting on where that money can go? And in reality, there's so many organizations out there. I have yet to come across a place that a client wanted to give that they weren't able to through their donor advised fund, and even got new, smaller charitable organizations added to the platform. Because these organizations like National Christian, Schwab Charitable, they'll do the research if there's an organization that you want to give to and get it approved on their platform. So there's a lot of flexibility when it comes to using a platform like that to help accomplish your charitable goals.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more with Heather Deaton from Ellen Becker Investment Group talking about charitable giving. Welcome back to Money Sense. My name is Christina Schnuckel. I'm one of the wealth advisors here at Ellen Becker Investment Group, and I am interviewing today my fellow wealth advisor, Heather Deaton, who's on the show. Heather has been sharing with us a little bit about the One Big Beautiful Bill and how it's reshaping the landscape of charitable giving and some of the things that are really important to know both this year, still in 2025, but then in 2026 and beyond, as you look at how to get the most tax savings from your charitable giving strategies. You know, Heather, you mentioned that most clients don't give just for the tax breaks. You give from your heart, but we want to make sure if you are giving and you're generous, we want you to get that little tax reward for it too. So there's definitely some benefits in looking at how all of that works together. Before the break, Heather, we were talking a little bit about donor advised funds, and we touched on how a donor advised fund could be used end of life for some charitable giving. But I wanted to circle back and talk about, you know, beneficiary designations going to charity and some of the tools that are at clients' disposal there of what they can be thinking about.
Absolutely. That's all kind of falls into estate planning. And you had mentioned your parents' experience or recent experience you guys are going through with wanting to just really have the plan set for where they want their assets to go at the end. So one fairly simple way to include a nonprofit in your legacy plan, right, in your estate plan, would be to do a beneficiary designation. Work with your advisor or your account platform to set the beneficiaries on your investment accounts to go either all or part to the nonprofit, maybe some to family, wherever you want them to go. Typically, it's done with percentages. When we think about, again, from a planning perspective, the exact best accounts, right? If you've got all three different buckets of investment type accounts from a tax perspective, you've got the pre-tax IRA, you've got the never taxed again Roth, and the taxed only on capital gains like brokerage or taxable account. When we think about who should get each of those assets, a nonprofit never pays taxes. If your kids get your IRA, they have to take the money out and they have to pay income tax on it. If the charity gets the IRA, they'll take it out and they don't pay income taxes. So it's more money that stays in that like estate to go to the nonprofit, and it also helps your, in the case where if you've got children that you're spreading it across to, it simplifies and saves them taxes on that gift, that legacy gift that you've given them.
We're a big fan of pointing that out to clients, if they are charitably inclined and want something to go to charity when they pass, because those other two buckets you mentioned, Heather, of the taxable money or after tax that you pay capital gains on, typically most of those assets for the majority of our clients will get a step up in cost basis when they pass away,
right?
Meaning that their beneficiaries, oftentimes their children, are going to inherit that income tax-free, just like those Roth funds that they're going to inherit income tax-free.
Right.
So it's hugely beneficial. I also like sharing with clients that IRA account, you may have $1 million of an IRA, but you may not want $1 million going to your charities. You may want to give $50,000, and you can still use this strategy because your financial advisor can help break apart that IRA into different segments or make sure that they've got the right percentages you noted on it. So it's not an all or nothing.
No, and that's something that we review, you know, on a regular basis as the investments grow and percentages can get out of whack. When we try to compare them to the dollar amount that was supposed to be set aside. Now, another piece of that estate planning is actually building that into your will or into your revocable living trust. We're huge fans of revocable living trusts. That's, again, a topic for another day. But they are private. They can provide protection. And it's a much more efficient way to run an estate because it avoids probate. So in any of those legal documents, you can also designate nonprofits. You can designate an exact dollar amount. Or you can designate a percent. You have to go back to the attorney every time you want to change that percentage, that dollar, that name. So that's some of the pieces that, you know, we always kind of watch with clients when they have plans they set. That's why we sit in those estate planning meetings with our clients, because we want to be able to see and advocate for them when it comes to their big picture.
Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned earlier, too, your trust or your mode of distribution, your will, your trust can direct money into one of those donor advised funds, meaning that you don't necessarily need to have those charities already established of where you want the money to go.
Right.
Hopefully 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the future from when you're setting up this plan, but that you're naming those successful, those successors, those individuals who know you and know what causes are important to you to then request those grants from your donor advised fund.
Right. And there's more sophisticated charitable accounts that can be created throughout your lifetime at your death, you know, charitable remainder trust, charitable unit trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that, again, you know, talking with your wealth advisor, talking with your estate planning attorney to really put everything together and make that solid plan. All plans can be changed, but you want something that's going to work for you for a while.
Absolutely. So that's a little bit on kind of giving later in life, or we should say afterlife, essentially, as part of your legacy plan. But Heather, share with me some of the strategies that you find successful of giving during your lifetime and how clients can do that, whether it's, you mentioned appreciated stock, and there's a cap to that, as well as QCDs, qualified charitable donations. Those are a big thing that we talk to all of our clients about.
Right, right. So this is what I call warm hand giving, because it's before your death. So you're giving this while you're alive. You get to see the wonderful things that your donations do for your passion. Stop. 3, 2, 1. You get to see where your funds go to support the places that you're passionate about. So on the stocks or the highly appreciated securities, you can even do this with real estate. You can donate that to an organization, a nonprofit organization. And why would you do that? Why would you just not sell the stock and give them the cash? Well, if you've held, I don't know, let's just say Apple, you've held Apple for 30 years, those capital gains, it's almost all gain probably, right? Your cost basis is very little given all the stock splits. So you would end up paying taxes on that profit in the year that you sell it. Even though the cash goes to charity, you would still pay taxes on that profit. If you just give that Apple stock directly to the charity, and almost all nonprofits, almost all places of worship have someone they work with to accept stock donations,
mm-hmm.
they'll sell it right when they get it. They're not going to hold the Apple. They're going to want to sell it and take the cash and use it for their operating budget. But if you donate that stock, you have not sold it, so you do not have a profit. In fact, you get that tax deduction for the fair market value of that Apple stock on the date of the gift. And so that can also be used, I mentioned this before, that can be used to fund a donor advised fund as well. So again, you're getting, I don't want to say getting rid of something, you're using it in a really super important, valuable way. This strategy is also good for the stuff you just want to get rid of, right? Like complicated holdings that it's like, okay, I'm going to just give this to the nonprofit, not worry about what the tax ramifications would have been or not have been for me. I'm just going to give this to the organization. They'll sell it. They're not worried about the tax side, and they can simplify it and just get rid of it and use the cash for their operations.
Well, you mentioned Apple, and that's a great example of a stock that's had a lot of growth. And we often have clients come in and they are really overexposed to a particular sector, a particular stock, because of a stock like that, that has performed really well. It's been a fantastic performer. We don't want to completely weed it out of the portfolio, but it shouldn't be 40% of their holdings.
Right.
But taxes are the reason that they often aren't making a change. So if they're charitably inclined, we're huge fans of clients using the highly appreciated stock for those donations. It's a win-win. They get to take some of the risk off of their portfolio and not have to realize those gains. And the charity gets that highly appreciated stock to use for their operating expenses.
Yep.
It's a great tool.
Now, another strategy that applies to a specific group of people, but all of us are going to get there. Many of us are already there, is qualified charitable distributions, QCD. So this is like the alphabet soup game, because a QCD is a donation to a nonprofit that comes out of a person's IRA and an individual retirement account that's pre-taxed. None of that money has ever been taxed before. donation, this distribution, this QCD out of that IRA can go, if it goes directly to the charity, again, you can't take the distribution, put it in your checking account, and then write a check to the charity. The check to the charity has to be written from the account itself. And what does that do when it goes to the nonprofit and they use it and spend it? You've then given a gift out of your IRA and it does not count as income. Anything else you take out of your IRA that goes into your checking account for your spending, you are paying income tax on that. But anything that goes directly to a nonprofit, you don't. Now, the caveat is that you have to be a certain age. Mm-hmm. You have to be over 70 and a half. So oftentimes we say to our clients, hey, once you hit 70 and a half, maybe you do all your charitable giving out of your IRA because it's money that's never been taxed and won't be taxed. Once you hit your, this is another alphabet soup, the thing, required minimum distribution phase, RMD, where the IRS makes you take a certain percentage out of your tax deferred account out of your IRA every year, you can use QCDs. It counts towards your RMD, but again, you're not taxed on it. So it reduces the tax impact of having to take money out of your IRA because it goes directly to charity. If you are already donating to charity by writing a check every year, every month, every week, that money's already been taxed one way or another. And so you might as well take it directly out of your IRA, again, if you're over 70 and a half.
Absolutely. That's such a powerful tool because I don't know about you, Heather, but so many of the clients I work with are really heavy in the retirement assets, the IRA pre-tax assets, because they saved in their 401ks and they saved diligently. And now they're sitting at a large amount and they don't need that whole required minimum distribution, that RMD, for spending. So I'd much rather have them spend their Social Security that's coming in and have that gifting go out. And most companies can make it really easy. I know where we custody assets, Schwab, they do a checkbook. You can write your checks straight out of there and it makes it really, really simple.
Yep. And then just make sure you put a giant sticker, rubber bands around that checkbook that says charitable giving only.
Yes.
Is the easiest way for the record keeping on that.
Well, and because year end is going to creep up really, really fast on us, you know, I want to note too that one issue we see every year is from an education standpoint, sometimes some of these smaller charities don't recognize that those checks actually have to be cashed by December 31st, if they're coming out of your IRA, to count towards that required minimum distribution versus the postmark date of other checks. So we always encourage clients, if you're writing checks, doing anything from your IRA, do it earlier in that holiday season so you can ensure that that check gets cashed before the new year and it counts towards your required minimum distribution.
Right.
Well, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back with more with Heather Deaton and talking about charitable giving strategies after the break. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, wealth advisor and director here at Ellenbecker Investment Group. And today I've been chatting with Heather Deaton, one of my fellow wealth advisors here at EIG. We've been talking really big picture about charitable giving and some of the changes coming through on the One Big Beautiful Bill, as well as some of the strategies that are available to you if you are charitably inclined, how to get some tax benefit from that. But Heather, in our last couple minutes together today, I was hoping you could share a little bit more about what are some of the other ways to be charitable, the other ways that you could be giving, thinking outside the box a little bit.
Well, and you know, really, again, living out your passion of being engaged, helping others, building community. We've talked for the whole show about the money side of it and the asset side of it and helping with their operating budget. But there's more to it than just that. So there's like the five T's of charitable giving. That's the treasure part, mm-hmm. right? It's something that you worked hard for, you own, you give to charity or to the nonprofit. But there's other pieces, talent. So maybe you are an experienced or even novice graphic designer and an organization needs that kind of help. Maybe you want to be on a board because you know the Roberts rules. you know, that's a bigger commitment. So there's just plain using your like time, that's another T, and your talent when we think about those more specialized skills. You know, I'm on the board for Fondy, like I've mentioned, and we need photographers on occasion for our events. It's great when somebody says, you know what, that's my job. That's my career, and I can do that for the organization. Think about that cost savings from that organization so more of their dollars can go to their programming and can go to their staff. Mm-hmm. So that's a big piece, is that talent side of things. Another one is ties. So that's where you really think about who's in my network who would really appreciate this nonprofit also. Who can I introduce to this nonprofit? Who can I bring to the events so they can hear the mission? Everybody I know knows this too, and I'll say it right here on our show. I will meet anybody at the Fondy Farmers Market or the Milwaukee Winter Farmers Market that Fondy runs any Saturday morning. And I would love to take people on a tour and introduce them to the vendors and show them the stuff that I really like, have them talk with the farmers. Like, that's how we can really bring people along. So if you know that the organization that you're so passionate about, or multiple organizations, if you can really share your network, share them with your network, share your network with them, that's really impactful, because it's so many of these organizations. We have so many in Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area. They're small, and it's all about their reach, right? The more people that know about them, the more people that can benefit from their programming, and the more people that can get involved and support them, whether it's financially or donating time. One other T is testimony, right? So that is kind of, I always think of that as like, well, I don't want to talk about it in my network. Well, I also want to just share the story. So whether that is, you know, really being able to share why you're so passionate, maybe you've benefited from their programs, or you know people that have benefited from their programs, and that's why you're involved. Sharing your stories of what you've either felt yourself as being part of the programming, or that you have seen when you've been active in the organization as far as an impact story. Like, it's so much about storytelling is what really brings people together, really can promote and advocate for organizations. And so it's really that testimony.
That testimony is key, Heather. And, you know, as you were thinking, I was thinking through examples that I've seen time and time again of so often a successful retirement for our clients includes retiring to something.
Absolutely.
Okay, of something that they mm-hmm. want to do. And more often than not, I have clients leading up to retirement saying that they really want to volunteer. But when we actually get to retirement, sometimes they just don't know where or how to start or how to get involved. So sharing not only your testimony, but that invitation that you mentioned of, I will meet anyone at Fondy's Farmer Market, you know, that invitation, you never know how much that can mean to someone else to get that invite that automatically, you know, helps them feel more comfortable coming to the events, getting to know the organization and giving of their time.
Right. And I'll share my like, Fondy journey with you and the listeners, just because it does kind of show, like, just getting involved a little bit. I learned about Fondy. It's a organization in the city of Milwaukee focusing on healthy food access, entrepreneurial opportunity for farmers and vendors, and also community building and advocacy. So I learned about Fondy Food Center when someone from the organization did like an adult education hour at my place of worship. And they talked about being able to get a, you know, giant bag of greens for, you know, I don't know, $3 or $4 at this market that's heavy on produce. And that's my favorite kind of farmer's market. And I thought, I got to check this out. So I went that next week, Saturday, and fell in love with the market. Started going every week. I'd bring my husband, I'd bring the kids. They were little then. And we would shop there every week. Then I started to volunteer at the market. I helped clean up. I helped do food demonstrations, because we do cooking demonstrations. So I got to actually lead one time. I made pupusas. I have made them in El Salvador. I don't know. They let me do it.
Anyway, I don't know what a pupusa is, but it sounds delicious.
I know. I'll have to bring one. I'll have to make some for the staff. And then I started helping in the office. And then I started on a committee with one of our annual fundraisers. Then I was asked to be on the board. And I've been on the board now for almost 8 years. And it's been so meaningful to be a part of this organization. I tell that whole long story to just say it all started with going to a farmer's market.
Well, Heather, I think that's the perfect place to end when we talk about charitable giving. And it's so much more than just the finances.
Right.
You know, we're here to help our clients figure out how to accomplish their goals and to do it in the most meaningful way to them.
Yeah.
And that often involves taxes and money. But it's also the whole person approach and understanding what's important to you. So thank you for sharing your knowledge today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank
in
you
this
for
great
shedding
discussion.
Light on the One Big Beautiful Bill, the charitable impact, as well as some of these other strategies that are in place now and will hopefully continue to be available to our clients. So a lot of good information out there. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to visit our website or reach out to one of our advisors. But Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. If you've enjoyed today's show and you want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.